Good morning.
Good morning.
Wow. Nobody ever usually responds when you say good morning and things like this. So glad you're able to join us today. You know, it was one of those things last night. I was with a couple of folks, and we went to the Nerd New Year over in Redwood City last night. Did anybody get to go to that? No? It was actually pretty cool. They had a band, and they counted down to 11-11-11 last night. Or 11-11 and 11 seconds last night and celebrated Nerd New Year. So it was, it's kind of a cool little event. So, but I'm glad you were able to make it here today to our HTML5 camp. Kind of want to get a sense of what where you're coming from, not from a location perspective, but from a technology perspective. I'm curious, how many of you, is this your first time here on the Microsoft campus? Holy cow, that's quite a few of you. Excellent. So glad you're able to make it. We're going to show off quite a bit around HTML5 today, some of the tooling that we have, and just some of the standards that HTML5 brings to the table. This is the agenda. We've got a fairly packed day. We're going to do first part of it's going to be all around content and really talking about HTML5 and some of the different pieces of it. We're going to have an hour for lunch, and just from a logistical standpoint, lunch will be served out here. You're free to grab that. There's a cafeteria downstairs. The cafeteria won't be open, but the seating will, so you can take it downstairs, and there's a lot of room down there to go have lunch and spread out a little bit. After lunch, we'll do a little bit more content, and then around 2:30-ish, we're going to go into hands-on labs and give you a chance to really kind of dig in and play with the technology. We have a number of people here that will be able to help you make sure you have the labs installed, and if you get stuck on anything, they can come. If you've got questions, want to drill into some of the topics, you're able to do that. One of the cool things we arranged today is a T-shirt printing press going on. It will be, where is it going to be, Nisha? Right out here? Right out here. So you'll be able to go in and create a custom T-shirt that you'll be able to take with you after you leave today. So it's a really kind of a neat deal. We'll try and wrap up around 5:45 today. At that point, I'm sure you got an evaluation. We really want your feedback. We want to make these things better and better over time, so we'd like to get your feedback. And then in exchange for your feedback, you'll get into a raffle for some prizes. So we've got Xboxes, we've got some phones, some books. So we've got a number of different things that we'll give away at the end of the day. Must be present to win. And then at the end, we'll also have a little cake reception we're going to do at 6 o'clock after we do the giveaways. We got pretty good response on this. We had a number of people, so we were actually sold out. You may notice we have some overflow rooms. This will also be live streamed, so we have this going on a live stream. If afterwards you saw something here today and you said, that was pretty neat, but I kind of want to remember something that the speaker said, all of this is being recorded, and you'll be able to come back and watch it later if you want to see it again. So, you know, if you take a look at HTML5 and CSS3, it's a pretty wide spectrum of things. There's a lot to it. And in about a little less than half a day, or a little more than half a day, we can't cover all of HTML5. So we're going to cover specific topics. Those things you see highlighted in blue up here are where we're going to drill into today. The ones that we haven't highlighted, those we're not going to cover today. There are a lot of resources, so you can go find some afterwards. But we're going to focus in on the areas that are in blue. So who's speaking today? I'm going to just do the intro, and then we'll get the smart people up here. We've got Dr. Doris Chin, who will be speaking quite a bit on HTML5. She's been spending a lot of time with HTML5 over the last year and a half, and she's got some great resources on her blog. And so if you really are interested in some of these topics, I recommend that you go subscribe to her blog or take a look at her Twitter feed. We've got William Leong, who's also been spending some time with us, who's going to speak. And Alice Pang, who's a developer evangelist we have that we brought up for this. So just want to make sure that if you have questions for the speakers or you want to connect with them after this or you want to see some of the resources that they have, follow them on Twitter, go subscribe to their blog. I want to make sure that you can connect with them after this event if you need to. During our labs, we have a number of different people that are from Microsoft that will be around to help you. We'll make sure that you know who they are. If you have questions, come find one of the speakers, find somebody that you know is with Microsoft, and we will make sure you have somebody to help you out during the labs if you need it. So I want to make sure, I know that when we sent out the registration stuff for this and the confirmation, we kind of had a little homework for you. Not everybody always does the homework. So if you didn't do the homework, This is where you go get it. This is where you go get the setup for this. This stuff works with all the major browsers, so you don't have to have IE. We like when you use IE, but you don't have to have IE. You can use any of those, any of the browsers. Web Matrix is a free download for doing website development. Visual Studio Web Express. If you get Visual Studio, you have to get this Web Standards Update to get the technology to work perfectly for HTML5. And then the labs. And so those are the things you'll want to have to go today. If you didn't do the homework beforehand, we'll have that available for you. If you can't download it while you're here, we'll have that available for you on a USB key if you need it. And we'll make sure that you can get that installed if you need to get it installed. Absolutely. Visual Studio, that's for 2010. Yeah, the question was the update that's referenced on this slide, is that for Visual Studio 2008 or 2010? It's only for 2010. Just some more links, just to make sure that you have them. I just want to make sure that if you're listening to the presentations, you can go download them. We do have Wi-Fi here. If everybody goes and downloads at once, we might have a little bit of an issue. But, you know, you can go check it and download the links if you need to. A couple other things. We like real-time feedback. So if you see something that you have a question on, you have some feedback about the event, something positive, something negative, there's a hashtag out here. So feel free to tweet. We'll have people monitoring the tweet stream the entire time and trying to respond to those things if you have questions or seeing if there's feedback real-time that we can adjust to. Like I mentioned, there is Wi-Fi here. That's the SSID. It's open, so you can get in there. I talked a little bit about some of the giveaways and the fact that we do want your feedback. We want to make sure that we're incorporating feedback so we do this better over and over and over again. A couple of resources. Like I said, we're going to point this out over and over. I know when I sit in an audience, I'll see it the first time, and I'll go, I probably have everything, and then later I'll realize I missed something. So we have a bit.ly for these things, bit.ly for Web Matrix, WCSV. And then we also have the lab setup instructions. So you're going to see that over and over again just in case you missed it and if you just make sure you get things downloaded that you needed. So with that, welcome. I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Doris, who's the smart person, and we'll let her start talking a little bit more about HTML5. Thanks.
Thank you, Joe. Before I get started with, I'm going to switch to the first presentation. Again, my name is Doris Chan, and Joe already shared with you my blog address and my Twitter. And towards the end, I'm also going to share with you my email address in case you didn't have it. So Let me share with you a little bit of background about myself. So I'm actually working on the web tier for many years. Before I joined Microsoft about a year and a half. Before that, I worked with open source community for over 10 years, working on different open source technology. And then web tier is always my favorite subject. And now is obviously it's HTML5 because that's the future of the web. I actually did quite a bit of research on the Ajax. So if you have any questions or JavaScript and little things, feel free to ask me. So before I get started with, I'd like to get a little idea about your background. So I know where to speed up, where to slow down. So how many of you are web developers? All right, very good. Unfortunately, I won't be able to see people online and also as well in the overflow room, but I'm going to check with them later. How many of you are web designers? All right, good. So how many of you already have some exposure to HTML5? Very good. How many of you just sort of barely heard about HTML5? Cool, no problem. We actually have the content, you know, for all you guys. All right, so let's spend the next like 25 minutes talk about the fundamentals of HTML5. Obviously, the very first question you will ask is, where did HTML5 come from? Right? So I actually have a question for you. So who invented the HTTP HTML? I heard some people say it, Tim. Okay, raise your hand if you say that. Okay. Oh, two of them. Okay, I'll see if I could I'll give you guys something. So exactly. Tim Biel, we also call him Tim Biel, he invented HTML. And people could tell me how many years ago was that? Five? 10? 20? Exactly, you're right. 20. 20 years ago. So he basically proposed and implemented HTML. And then HTML has been survived for over 10 years, 20 years, I'm sorry. And then it is still evolving, still making good progress. And then that's pretty amazing, isn't it? If you think about technology world, it's very rare for technology to survive for over 20 years. So why is that? Let's take a look at the history. So 20 years ago, Tim first proposed HTML. Afterwards, there's quite a bit of work from the experts, from the web developers like you guys, from the architects, from the browser makers, the vendors. So they got involved, and then that's come out with HTML2. But the only thing at that time is it seemed like each browser maker has their own implementation of HTML. There's not really a big standard there yet, right? And then move on to 3. So that's a time we're actually getting better cooperation among different browser vendors. But still, you know, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of divergence. And then that's a time actually adding a lot of new features. And then we get into 3.2 to the 4. So 4 is pretty a milestone kind of spec because it does introduce tables, forms, and perhaps the most important feature is the CSS. Right? So that's when we could start to use CSS. That's when we could actually separate the presentation from the behavior. We use CSS to do most of the presentation. Right? So that's cool. So, and then afterwards, so I'm talking about that bunch of people involved with HTML up to 4 and 4.01. And then there is forming up another standard group, which is W3C. The reason they want to have a different kind of approach is because if you look at the old HTML, it's pretty sloppy. And you could write any markup, and it probably will still show something, right? It's not that strict. It's not that structured. And it doesn't really let you to invent your text that easily. So that's why they propose XML. Very good idea. Everything will be more strict syntax-wise. And then you will have to follow a lot of guidelines or rules. Otherwise, you will have errors. It won't let you run, right? So, and then XHTML afterwards. So the same concept, mix up the XML onto the web. And then that's also the time, you know, people say, hey, we want a more validations, we want more strictness on the syntax, and then sort of like a W3C went on this route, doing the 1.1, 1SE, up to 2, right? So that's W3C. Bunch of experts in the standard group, they want to do that. But the reality is the envisioned XHTML never really materialized, right? So for various reasons, right? Maybe it's too strict, maybe because those are not people really that activated in the web development, right? So another group of people, which is mostly the browser vendors, browser makers, they say, okay, so we're going to actually concentrate on the web. Let's switch it back a little bit. We're going to iterate HTML4, and we're going to come out with things like web form 2, or web, and then migrate to web application 1. And then eventually everybody seem like working on similar kind of standard and then work together for many years. I will talk about that just a minute. And that's what we see as we see today, HTML5. Okay, so many iterations, a lot of work. Now, But probably you know, when you go to that stage, you probably will see, okay, so W3C is a standard. Then what about the other work group actually we see, you know? And sometimes people are saying, I don't even know which one is standard. Is that W3C or this WTWG? What it stands for, Web Hypertext Applications Technology Working Group. So little history, go back is, so started with year 2006. W3C, it's actually very good because if you see these two things here, it's basically divergence, right? W3C is go this way, XML, XHTML way, web is go to the more like a still focus on HTML. So they start to work together starting with 2006. And 2007 is a good year. They finally, W3C is working with all the web vendors, web makers, and work with a group called WTWG. But still today, you will see the spec or implementation will be actually slightly different from what proposed on the WTWG versus W3C. But one thing to remember, W3C is a standard. If you want to look into standard, this is the one. This is the spec you should check out. So afterwards, basically after like 5 years hard working, compromising, fighting, we finally reached some convergence here, which is based on HTML4 and some XHTML1 gradually evolved into HTML5. That's what we see HTML5 today. Right? So this is really good. This is very exciting. This is also because partially because of open source effort behind. So all the experts in the standard group, all the browser makers, all the developers, the communities, the contributors all work together. So very exciting. You know, now we have HTML5, and that's the future of the web. And then even more exciting is it's still changing. It's still evolving. So I think we are extremely lucky to be part of that. We are extremely lucky. We will be able to showcase the technology, to build an app, and to contribute to that, to give the feedback, because the spec is not a final yet, right? We still have room to contribute, to let our voice to be heard. So extremely exciting. And then just a little bit about, people ask about XHTML2. Well, it's basically dropped, you know, after year 2009, because everybody said we're going to work on HTML5, so which is it's totally cool, which is really great. Okay, so any questions about history? Okay, now you know all the specs. Now you know all the working groups work together. So let's move on. So this slide does not try to sort of scare you, but I want to just show you. When we talk about HTML5, it is a big umbrella. We actually cover many other things. Right, we cover is actually, as a matter of fact, if you look at the strictly speaking HTML-related content, it's only that many specs. And the rest of them, big part of that is CSS3, which we're going to spend a lot of time talking about that. Also, we have a lot of web apps-related API, SVG, last but not least, which is ECMA, the new standard for JavaScript. So everything here is under the umbrella of HTML5. So when people talk about HTML5, they mean everything here. Okay, a lot of specs, over 100 specifications there. Now, why you think there are so many different colors in the spec? That's because they're all in different stage, right? Over 100 specs, you don't expect every single one of them at the same stage. So, you know, I don't mean to sort of like dive into the detail, but if you look at like some of the color coding, you see some of them really, you know, the yellowish one is really in the first published working draft, very early stage. Some of them, the blue one, a lot of them, the blue one is actually at a working draft. The green one is good, it's the last call. So most of them actually, since this May this year, it's in the last call stage, right? And then orange one is pretty stable. It's at a candidate recommendation. And all the blue ones meeting recommendation is pretty much done. Okay, so we actually, throughout the webcam today, some of the spec is probably in the early stage, but some of them may not. It's probably in the stable stage. So we're going to actually share with you, we do the labs, all those things, based on the more stable versions, more stable APIs, right? So that it will reduce the complexity, right? And then make the lab works easier. Okay, so the other thing I want to actually spend a little time talking about is the Microsoft approach. I know you have a lot of your own thinking or speculation or comments or thinking about how Microsoft is embracing HTML5. And we're 100% embracing HTML5. As a matter of fact, you know, we actually have one member, which is the chairperson in the HTML5 W3C standard group. And then all the features we're talking about today, especially if you download IE, if you try a few things, those are all W3C standard compliant. Okay, so basically the whole idea, if you see that, is develop HTML5 apps, and then it will run across different browsers. That's actually one of the beauty of that, right? So because of that, we don't want you to actually still get into some, you know, browser incompatibility, because I know it is a big pain. Okay, I work on Ajax and work on the browser incompatibility, try to resolve all those issues for many, many years. I know the pain. So now, if you use IE9, if you look at all the HTML5 we implement there, it's all cross-browsers. So all the stable features, like I said, from a previous diagram, is already implemented in IE9. And then for a lot of features, it's a little bit not that stable, right? But it's already in good shape. Then we actually put it in IE10 platform preview. And actually, we're going to actually show you some demo later on to show you what are the cool features in IE10 platform preview. And then for some of the features, which is totally experimental, not that stable, may have some issues still need to be resolved, then we leave it into another site called HTML5labs.com. Now, those of you who are talking about WebSocket, IndexedDB, Media Capture API, File API, all those things, you know, you say, oh, Microsoft doesn't support it. That's not true. We actually have all those more experimental stage API inside HTML5 Labs. If you go to that site, you will see all the sample code, all the demos, and you can take a look. All right. And again, all the things inside HTML5 Labs is eventually going to make into IE10 when it's final. All right. So next one we're going to share with you is some of the features we're supporting in IE9. And then obviously, you know, there's so many different HTML5 features, you know, I won't be able to list all of them. So if you want a complete list, you could go to this bit.ly link to get a better idea. But if you look at all the major features, canvas, audio, video, local storage, cross-window messaging, SVG, all those things is supported inside HTML5. And then CSS3, we have a very rich set of features supported there as well, like 2D transforms, bold radiance, shadow, the wolf font, medium queries, and so many other things, which William is going to talk about that in more detail in the CSS3 session. And we're probably the very first one to support SVG and support so many different features listed here. And then also we have we also support ECMA Script 5. We support the native JSON. And we did a tremendous performance tuning on all the major HTML features. And then also we actually support all the DOM-related parsers and all those things. So this is IE9. And it's ready. It's in production quality. And as a matter of fact, you're going to use a lot in today's labs. So people are wondering, so what are the IE10 platform previews? This is for the IE10 platform preview 2. Okay, so all the nice features you probably want to see, for example, drag and drop, file API, form validations, good one, sandbox, web workers, right? If you want a synchronized way to do things, you need a web workers to work that. And then for CSS3, we also have grid, flexbox, gradient, monocolumn, floats, all the cool features supported in a preview version, and then plus a lot more things here. We actually supported ECMA 5 strict mode, which is very important for JavaScript implementation. So here are the things we already supported in IE10 PP2, and you could download. So I know I could talk forever. You know, I could talk for another 15 minutes without a slide. How about we see some demo? Yeah, question. Correct. So our question is the platform PP3 is only available for Windows 8. That is correct. That is part of the Windows 8 package.
Yeah, so IE release cycle is so long, like it takes almost 6 months to release a new browser or new
So what are you saying? Actually, it's not quite true. We did have a 12 weeks build cycle. So every 12 weeks, we will have a new build for the browser, especially for the platform preview. So 12 weeks, I think it's pretty reasonable. Right, so Windows 8, all the preview you could download, you could try it, and the IE10 PP3 is part of that, and you could take a look, you could see it. So if you take one step back, you want to take a look at IE10, it is PP2 is available on Windows 7, so you could take a lot of features already support that. Obviously, the most latest build has more feature, but then if you want to get a feeling about that, it's totally available on Windows 7. And as a matter of fact, you could try it today if you have Windows 7. Yeah. So, and again, eventually IE10 final release is going to be available on Windows 7 as well. All right. Okay, so we're going to actually do quite a few real-life demo, and I'm going to actually do it in our production quality browser. So the first one I'm going to share with you is the Pac-Man. Who never played Pac-Man? Tricky question. Who never played? Okay, a few of you. Okay, so this is probably the largest Pac-Man you will see. All the mazes here, all the games here, it just belong to this little red square. So you will see, you know, all the different mazes are available here. Each one of them, if you click any one of them, is actually a game. All right? And then you could actually get on to log on, and you could also build up your own board if you want to, and then sort of contribute into this big, you know, a Pac-Man maze. So, of course, you know, I sort of failed automatically. But then every single one of them, and then you could actually move on to the next maze like this. You know, it's pretty fun, you know. Oops. Sorry, not a good day. So go back to the home. So this is the maze and all the technology is completely developed in HTML5, and it's developed by a team in Australia. And then all the it's using the Canvas technology as well as a lot of JavaScript. And for any of those HTML5 app, one quick way to do is, how many of you actually know in IE10 we have a developer tool called F12? Very few people. So we actually have a tool, and then you will be able to see all the source code for HTML level, CSS, script, all the JavaScript, and then you could also do profile. You could determine the performance, where the bottleneck is, and then what's even more cool about that is, have you ever used something called a Fiddler? Okay, so we actually have a very similar function here called a network. You could actually capture your HTTP request and response, just like Fiddler. So it's all integrated in the IE9, and it's no additional download or installation. Once you download the IE9, it's all there. Isn't that cool? And you could do all the debugging, you know, anything, could set up a breakpoint, things like that. It's all there, right? So we'll go back and talk about that. So one thing, if you want to take a peek, is all the coding, you know, if you look at that, you know, it's a really simple HTML, and then you will know this is actually HTML5. And I'll show you what is more look like in HTML4, right? You're probably more familiar with HTML4, but this is HTML5, and this is just a little cross with migrate into modernizer, which we're going to talk about. We will tell you exactly in this browser what are the features supported, what are the features not supported, right? So we go back, talk about that. This is a tool you probably see. So this is a game. It's very cool. And the other thing I'd like to share with you is actually some site with some music. And you could change the background from daytime to nighttime in a very big street, a nice street. And you could see, open the door, see the interior, and see very nice, you know, all those really exciting features with all the flow dynamics lines. And you could rotate and they go along everything. And we could always go back to daytime really easily. So This is actually a very sort of like a leverage all the HTML5 feature website for BMW, right? So what a technology we use here is we use partially SVG because it gives us the best resolution. We use a lot of canvas. We generate all the 3D kind of effect using JavaScript. And then we use the audio and the video feature implement there. And the other things we did is if you look at all the rotation, every rotation, it's a rotation state, right? So we use a technique called image strip. Now, it is quite a bit of a challenge. If you see the card is rotating for so many different ways, every time when you try to capture that piece of data, it is a lot of data because the data is actually gathered from a server. So how do we resolve all the large amount of data so that you actually could see this is a real-time experience with all the IE9 hardware acceleration support for canvas, for audio, video, for SVG? So what we did is we actually calculated the difference between each rotation. We calculate the image pixel difference between each what we call rotation state. And yet, every single one of them is using canvas underneath that. Right? So people want to ask, see a real-life demo. This is actually a very real-life demo. We'll show you how we can actually leverage HTML5 and then resolve all the data processing and then also using some of the JavaScript library and including jQuery. And again, if you want to take a look using F12, take a look at the source code in HTML level, CSS, as well as JavaScript. Some of them is jQuery. Some of them is, say, 3D-specific JavaScript library. So you could actually, if you do F12, you will see it very clearly where to get that. If it's not a common place you could download, they're actually usually listed there.
No, I mean the JavaScript,
we implement the JavaScript engine. It's called Chakrab. And then we did a bunch of optimization. So if you look at the previous version, IE8, the JavaScript engine, or even 7, and versus IE9, the engine, you will see tremendous improvement. Because what we did here is we actually go through the top 700 website, and then we take a look what are the most commonly used JavaScript API people use. Anybody want to guess? What's the most commonly used JavaScript API we use today? All of you. You heard that? jQuery. Not a library script. API. Close enough. IndexOf. IndexOf is the champion. So this is the most common one used people. So we list all the, say, 100, top 100 or top 1,000, those API we use. And based on that, we did all the optimization on those API. So the JavaScript engine is super fast in IE9. Yeah?
The JavaScript engine,
is that a different name for JavaScript library? No. JavaScript will need some way to run in the browser. JavaScript engine, you could look at as a container to let this recognize that a syntax of JavaScript and run it and then integrate it with HTML to do the rendering. So JavaScript library is a collection of JavaScript with all the JavaScript APIs and so on. And then they probably will serve a particular purpose like jQuery, right? So you use jQuery to actually reduce the complexity of DOM manipulation. And there's a lot of nice widgets, some particular powerful event handling things for you to use. So basically, JavaScript library is trying to make your life easier. And JavaScript engine is basically where the JavaScript is running. So all the browser need to implement that. All the platform, if you have a JavaScript, you need a JavaScript engine there to run. JavaScript engine you needed to run JavaScript, put a simple way. Okay, you don't have to worry about that. It's actually embedded in the browser itself. You don't implement it. It's provided to you. All the browser have that. Yeah. Okay, so if you have more questions, take it offline. We'll discuss with you. Yeah. Okay, so we get a Second piece, 3D rendering, all the very visually appearing kind of demo. And then the other demo I want to share with you, how many of you actually like things like Tron? How many of you like to read some of the comic book? Don't be shy. Okay, so let's take a look. This is a site that can pre-develop HTML5 on the new feature, JavaScript. And when you enter, and what you see here, it's all the 3D effect. And then if you look at it, this is a regular comic book. Obviously, we need a lot of text. Those texts are not image. Those are wall fonts. You could actually have different fonts, wall font. You know, if you have a particular URL, you could get it from the web. So make things more interesting and very readable, visually appearing. And you see better interaction by using SVG canvas and then leverage with some of the JavaScript, obviously. And it's more like a sort of character focused, and it's more interaction for you to look into that. And if you look at this, I like it. Did you see the background, the storm? Did you see the flash there? This is all HTML5. And a lot of them is not even JavaScript. It's just CSS3. Isn't that cool? All right, so you get an idea, right? I know like you would love to spend the rest of the time trying to finish reading all the comic, but I'll leave it to you. So all the demos here are all online, available. I will share with you a link later on, so you could take a look. And it's, again, it's cross browsers. You could run on different browsers, but because IE has extremely good hardware acceleration support, so you will see all the real-time response. And feel free to try on the other browsers, and you will be the judge for the performance. Okay. All right, so let's move on. So I think I'm running a little bit time. I will show the other things to think about is HTML5. The IE implementation is the same on the desktop as well as Windows Phone 7 Mango release. So the same app, if you develop in HTML5, it will run cross platforms. And later on, if I have time, I will show you some demo on Windows Phone 7 like this. And then you will see quite a bit of HTML5 apps running there. And then you will see it's just exactly the same code, right? So I saved that. So the other thing I want to get into a little bit is about a semantic web. This is the key of HTML5. Just like Tim says, the semantic web is not a separate web, but an extension of the current one, in which information is given well-defined meaning, better enabling computers and people to work in cooperation. So really, semantic web is not a totally separate thing. It is a very core part of HTML5. So if you will use this diagram, semantic is something we want to get into a little bit. So again, people always like to use some kind of heat map, use kind of way to see what are the most commonly used HTML elements. So they use a periodical table to represent that. So based on that, and I'm not going to go over detail. You probably could take a look. Based on that, we decided instead of have a bunch of all the way doing things like a bunch of div, span, and all those things, we actually have a new paradigm. We have new semantic things. For example, a lot of people probably use like ASP.NET or whatever. You have a lot of templates for the header, footer, sidebar, right? You use those. But then why don't we just have some tags like this in HTML5 so make your life easier? You don't have to use a template, right? You just use simply HTML. But just introduce some of the new tag name like header, nav, article, session. So header is obviously header. Navigation, that's the links you put underneath that. Articles is actually for the body. One article could contain multiple sessions. But sometimes one session could also contain multiple articles. So I'll give you some example later on. A site is more like a navigation bar, usually on the side, and you will take a look. And the footer, and usually you will put a lot of copyright information or some other things in the footer. So these are actually the new vocabulary for HTML5 semantic syntax. Pretty simple, right? So if you want to say, okay, so give me some idea about what is the old way handling those things, right? So this is actually how we did it with div way. Very similar, right? Div with header ID, nav, sidebar, article, footer. And then now we kind of just say, make it simple. Forget about div. Let's just use a new tag called a header, nav, a site, session, article, footer, just like that, right? Pretty easy, right? And it's easy to remember. So now one of the common questions I usually get is people kind of wondering what's the difference between session and article. So my good friend Esther Will, she has a pretty good one. She says, think about a newspaper. The paper comes in sections, right? You have the sports session, real estate session, or maybe home or garden session. Each of those sessions in turn has articles, right? So, and then some of those articles are divided into sessions themselves, right? So that's why, in other words, you will have parent sessions with nested articles inside, or you could have a session, an article with nested sessions inside. So this is sort of explain the sort of connection or the slight difference between using these tags. So don't get confused. Try to figure out which one is parent and which one is children. It could be, you know, depends on the context, right? So the other thing is really a major improvement is this is something we're familiar with today, right? With HTML4, we did a lot with all the doc type. How many of you actually remember all the doc type? Anybody? Oh, you guys are pretty good. I never remember. I always copy and paste. So, but it's good. You have good memory. So that's good. So, but the rest of them, if you look at that, and it's obviously we have to define the metadata. We have to actually define the type of that piece of metadata, right? And define the content, like text, HTML, and so on. But really, you know, most of them, we already know it's HTML. What you know is JavaScript, right? We don't really need to have some, you know, put some extra effort into it, right? So hence, is HTML5, people say, let's make it simple. Since most people doesn't have that kind of good memory, let's just put doc type HTML. That's it. So every time, you could actually use the F12 tool to take a look at that website. If people tell you, this is a HTML5 app. If you look at their top line, the doc type is still all the old way. Then you tell them it's not. Okay, this is a truly HTML5 headline with the doc type. It's HTML. And then in addition to that, we get rid of all the like a type, defined text, HTML, all those things because we already know. So keep it really simple with metadata. The only thing you probably need is character set, right? The coding. And this is a very simple HTML5. And it's totally legitimate, and it's working fine. All right? So isn't that cool? All right. So if you want to look into how HTML5 actually implements some of the semantic tags, this is a very simple example. Just give you a little feeling about how we use the semantic tags. So we have a header. And then instead of just a header, we have an H group. It's like a group of headers you could do. So you do main header, subheader, and you could apply your CSS style sheet onto that to make it really presentable. And then you have the navigation links, bunch of links with a listing kind of thing. And you could have the body part, which is session. In this case, session is a parent, article is a children. For each of the article, you will have the header. You will have some of the mark, right? Mark kind of like a board kind of thing, right? And you could also have your aside, which is a side view, side area. In the side, maybe you will put some diagram, right? So HTML5 actually defines some new vocabulary called a figure. You could have a figure, new vocabulary. You could even have a figure caption. Remember, sometimes when you put an image there, you always try to figure out the layout, how to do it properly with all the image caption, right? Now it's also, you know, you could take it for granted. It's all provided to you. It's all defined. So you just have to put a figure, fig caption. That's it, right? So, and then obviously a footer, you know, usually put a copyright, all the information. Isn't that cool? And very straightforward, right? And you sort of understand what's the layout is going to be, what kind of look and feel you're going to expect. Okay, so I don't really think I have time to do another quick demo, but let me wrap up so we could move on. So can I use HTML5 today? The answer is absolutely yes. Yes, it's ready, and you should start to look into that, should start to develop an application. You don't want to wait everything to be finalized, right? Think about that. HTML has been for about 20 years, and HTML4 is about almost 10 years. You don't want to wait for another 10 years to get into the game, isn't it? So you want to actually start to get into that. And again, this is some of the tools we'll be using for the demo as well as for the labs. These are some of the additional resources you will be using in the lab, or when you go home, you could take a look. But let me point out all the three demo, the real life demo, is all from this link. It's called Beauty of the Web. All right, so you could actually look into that. There are over 100 real life HTML5 sites over there. So they're all really cool. Okay, I actually had a difficult time to pick the three I think will be good. And you could actually try all 100 of them. Another site which I highly recommend is this real life demo basically gives you the capability of HTML5, what's the potential of HTML5. But if you want to look into a particular feature for a particular new like a API, then I highly recommend you to go into IE Test Drive. It's actually basically listed the site as a feature specific one. Like, for example, it's for Canvas, for SVG, for audio, video, or maybe for a particular CSS feature. So you could actually take a look. All the demos are there, and you could take a look at sample code really easily. So with that, I think I'm going to let William. I think I apologize. I'm 5 minutes longer than I should have spoken. And William is going to talk about CSS3. Thank you.
Okay, let me just do a tech check here. Make sure all the computers are up. Need to log in on this other computer. Okay, great. Well, thanks everyone for coming out this morning. I had a chance to walk outside a little bit earlier, and the other NPR room is packed. And so we got a great turnout. My name is William Leong. I am not a PhD. I'm also not a dancer. although I'd love to see Doris dance. I'm an ISV evangelist, so I work with software companies in the Silicon Valley area. And focus on CSS3 and the HTML technology. So I'm going to give you an introduction to CSS3. Here's the agenda. We want to talk about what is CSS3, why you should care, what's new, and then point you to some tools and some resources to help you get up to speed. So you've seen this slide from Doris. And you know, on the bottom, it kind of tells you the various specs that make up HTML5. One thing to note is that the height of that bar has nothing to do with its relevance, because if you look all the way at the end, ECMAScript 5 is JavaScript. It's only one bar, but it's very important. It's a very important technology to power the open web today. You look at SVG. It's been around a long, long time, and so that's why it's in the candidate recommendation stage. But a lot of the specs as it relates to CSS, they're kind of evolving. They're still kind of new. So this was actually the state of affairs as of June 13th, and you know it is moving fairly quickly. So let's take a look at CSS3 in particular. If you were to ask someone, well, how do you define CSS, or CSS3 for that matter, it's almost like asking someone, well, how do you define a hammer, or a screwdriver, or a wrench? It's a tool, right? In the right hands, those tools can enable you to build a fantastic experience on a web. But in the wrong hands, like mine, because I'm not very handy, I could break a lot of stuff, and the output may not be very pretty, right? So what we want you to do today is to, one, kind of come and understand the tool set that's available, and then figure out, well, how can we get started? And it's actually fairly easy. Don't get intimidated by all of those specs. Don't get intimidated by the perceived complexity, because what we'll show you is if you learn little bits and pieces at a time, that will enable you to enhance existing websites that you might have, existing web apps that you might have. And then over time, you could build on top of the knowledge that you've gained and steadily and iteratively enhance your applications. So if you were to ask, well, what is CSS? Well, it's really a way for you to define the visual appearance of your websites. There are certain rules that you have to adhere to. And basically, when you look at a web page, there's a bunch of tags, right? HTML tags. How do you attach a particular visual appearance for those tags? So CSS gives you the ability to select different tags. It could be a specific HTML tag. It could be a class of tags that you want to group together and affect in one action. Or it gives you the ability to specify within your tree, the DOM tree, and say, for this particular tag, for this particular ID, I wanted to impact it in a visual way. And so that's really what CSS is. Now, the concept is fairly easy, but it's like any tool, it takes time to master. But it's, you know, there's no time like the present to start to do that. Now, Doris mentioned earlier that, you know, HTML5 as a technology or a set of technologies, an umbrella of technologies, covers over 100 specs. Well, CSS3, there's actually 50 that you deal with. There aren't 50 bars here, but if you were to go to the w3.org website, you'll be able to find that, yeah, indeed, there are 50, and they're all at various stages. Now, one of the smart things that the W3C did was, prior to CSS3, they had one monolithic spec, which meant that regardless of whether a certain what's come to be known as modules are further developed than others, well, everyone, there's only one train, everyone has to get on that train, and when that thing ships and arrives at a station, then it becomes this blessed standard, you could start to use it. And it really held up the evolution of the web. And so the smart thing that they did was, well, why don't we just kind of divide all of these various things that we want to do on the web as it relates to visual appearance into separate modules. There could different browser makers with an interest in certain aspect of that can submit specs, move those specs along, and then get it to a stage where other folks can adopt it and help to speed up that standardization process. And other things that may need more discussion, well, it'll be on a different train, it'll be on a later train, but no one thing is going to hold up the progress for the web. And so that's why there are over 50 modules. Now, the way we're able to allow users to play around with some of these modules is that each of the browser vendors are able to specify what are called vendor prefixes. So before something is has been standardized, what a lot of the browser vendors have done in this part of the process is that you apply a specific vendor prefix to your extensions. So, you know, -ms, Microsoft IE. Mozilla, right, for Firefox, and then WebKit for Safari and for Chrome. And that's how those vendors are able to perhaps have conflicting implementations of kind of a similar idea, and then hash them out within the standards committees. And then when it becomes a standard, then you take off the vendor prefix, and then you now have something that's going to be cross-browser. And again, you know, I think having multiple modules is a great idea. It allows the standard to move quickly through the process. And at the same time, you know, there's just better coordination within folks who are interested in these various aspects. So why should you care? Well, if you really look at the open web, you know, people generally refer to three things, right? HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, right? One represents the meaning behind the information. That's the HTML. One represents the presentation. That's CSS. And then you have JavaScript to represent the behavior of that information, right? And that's how you're able to build websites and web apps. So it's a key technology that if you're looking to build web apps, it's just one of the things you need to learn. It's not hard. If you look at it the other way, which is, you know, just being very practical, well, what are the benefits? I mean, you know, if I'm coming from a C++ or a C#, if you're a Microsoft in the Microsoft camp, and you know you're familiar with these Microsoft technologies, well, why should I be learning this stuff? Well, part of it is by learning CSS, you could actually improve the response time of your web apps, because if you look at some of the Doris's demos, you could see that in the past, what you couldn't do in CSS, you had to do in Photoshop. You know, before the advent of web fonts, a lot of folks did was they would go into Illustrator or Photoshop, they would render the image with the nice looking fonts, but it's static. And every time you have to update that website with a new image, well, it's a designer that has to kind of go through all that process. Then you need to ship the image onto your web servers. And it's really not very efficient from a SEO standpoint as well, right? Because it's a static image. Now, all of those things are now, you're now capable of doing that using HTML5 and CSS3. And so it really advances the web in a natural way. It also reduces our reliance on JavaScript. JavaScript is great, so don't get me wrong, but every time you use JavaScript to kind of detect features within your app, well, some code needs to be downloaded. Some code needs to be run locally on your browser. Now, the JavaScript engines are getting faster and faster, but if there's processing that you don't need to do, that your app doesn't need to do, well, that could actually help the performance of your app. The other thing is, you know, less site maintenance. By being able to mock up and define the look and feel of your web app in a central location via a style sheet, you're able to essentially define that look and feel across a very large web property instead of having to, you know, code it onto each page. And so you're able to kind of share any kind of branding that you might have you know, for your website. A couple of things that's also important is, in the past, as you're building web applications or web pages, what people tended to do was to build for the lowest common denominator. So if, let's say, you are running a browser that doesn't support the latest features, well, people have resigned themselves to essentially build that page to support the least of all the browsers, right? Now, a set of good patterns have developed such that we use a thing called progressive enhancement. Essentially, what that enables you to do is to build capabilities within your app that is optimal for the browser that you're running. And so your app should have the smarts to understand, oh, does my browser understand border radius? If so, I'm going to show a very nice button that's got, you know, rounded corners. On browsers that may be older, well, you've got the plain old square button. But that's okay, right? As long as your web app works, that's fine. And then as your users upgrade you know, to the latest browser, then they'll be able to enjoy the benefits of your of these capabilities within your web app. The other thing is, you know, in the past when you browse, it's typically done on a laptop or a desktop, right? It's you know, with the advent of mobile, with phones and tablets and things like that, well, the form factors have changed. And so how do you develop a web app that will adapt to the different form factors? Well, if you're on a laptop, you could pretty much count that, you know, 1024 by 768 at a minimum, and you could build a site for that. But what happens if you have a phone? How does your site look, and how does it behave on a phone? One approach has been, well, maybe I'll have a mobile dot, you know, domain.com, right? And you would build a separate site for your mobile devices. And that's worked. But the downside of that is you have to maintain more than one site, right? And so can you utilize technologies within CSS3 to build an app that will not only work on your laptops, but also work on your phone and on your tablets? And so, again, in terms of how much engineering resource you you expend, if you could build a web app that could span across devices and is intelligent about that, then it's a big win for you from a resource standpoint, but it's also a big win from a user standpoint, right? Because it's optimized. So let's take a look at what's new in CSS3. Thoris had this in a previous slide. So the bunch of names and buzzwords here. And the ones that I'll really focus on is going to be the ones that are bolded, web fonts and media queries. And we'll talk about what these are and show you some demos of what they are a little bit later. But I think it's important to also note that you know, CSS3 adds a whole lot of capabilities. Gradients. Gradients is probably something that I don't need to explain to you, right? It gives you a way to make your website more appealing. In the past, the way you do that is you use Photoshop or, you know, your favorite graphic design tool. And so if you have to change the gradient, if you have a different state when the mouse is, when the user hovers on top of a button, let's say, well, you just go to your design tool and you create a different color image, and then you just basically swap them back and forth. And that's worked, and you know, it's not like those images are that big that you really have to worry. But what if there was a way for you to define that within CSS, which made it easier to maintain? So you don't have to keep track of, you know, I've got four states I need to manage. So then four images based upon, you know, whether I've clicked on it, whether I'm hovering or whatnot. And so it is some extra work that you need to think about. And it's cycles that could be better spent maybe enhancing and adding new features to your website. And so what I'll do, Ed, is I'm going to switch over to my second computer here. And I will go through and show off some of the features that are not bolded here. So, need to sign in. Hey. It would be bad if this didn't work. Okay. The way things have worked out is that we're only able to project to the side in this room. So actually, it'll work out better because then I could kind of use this as a running list, and then you could see the actual demo on the side here. So we'll go to the IE test drive site. And so here's IE10 platform preview 3. And one of the things we want to take a look at, perhaps, is the 2D transform. So let me just click on that. So in essence, what you have here is a div with some text and a background. Okay, and you can actually try this when you get home or later on this afternoon. But it's quite simple. You have some sliders that you could move around. And so, you know, quite easy to kind of play around with this. And the cool thing is, here's the CSS. So you could actually play around with it, get the effect that you want, copy and paste that CSS into your style sheet, and now you're able to use 2D transform, right? Now, I know you all want to read a book to learn this stuff, but this is a way easier way of trying to, even if you were to add this capability onto your website, you know, that's not rocket science. I think I can do it. I think you can do it, right? And so lots of things you could do in terms of rotating it, and sometimes you want to kind of give it some treatment, you know. And so here's the CSS. Copy and paste away. I mean, isn't that how most people build websites anyway? Right? So that's 2D transform. And if you want, you could actually drill down into the, you know, I've got a bunch of book references at the end of my slide deck. You could go look at the W3C spec. I just think this is easier, right? Let's see what else we got. Let's look at border radius. We talked about it. So a while ago, people thought, wow, if you have rounded rectangles, that means you're a real designer, right? Because that was hard, and you have to kind of learn a graphics app. Well, now you no longer have to do that, because all you have to do is come to our site and, you know, define the border width and the style, and you give it a radius. Copy and paste that, you're done, right? So all you have to do is do the doctype thing that Doris said, put in the CSS, you know, link it to an external style sheet, and then basically utilize these styles for a particular HTML tag, for a class, or for an ID, and you're done, okay? Now, you could even set up individual border radius for each of the corners. And so it's as easy as kind of doing one of these and kind of say, hey, I want to be really cool, and I'll do one of those, and voila. I've seen many websites with buttons like that, haven't you? And you thought, wow, that's hard. No, it's not. It's easy. I think you could do it, right? What else we got? Let's look at text shadow. In the past, the way you do text shadow, and I've done this with Photoshop, is, you know, you basically have multiple layers, right? You copy the layer, and then you just kind of do the offset. Well, let me show you this. And you could even set a blur. I've seen a lot of really cool and fancy websites, and in fact, you have to pay people to do this. Look at how easy it is, right? Here's the CSS, right? You could play around with it and give it, you know, different opacities and whatnot. It's three lines of CSS. This is why CSS3 is important, right? I mean, I could tell you about all the benefits of CSS, why it's important and all that. I think, I don't know, maybe I look at things from a practical standpoint. I want to learn this because it makes my job easier, not because, you know, it's got such rocket science behind it. I frankly don't care. If I could create a website that can very easily and I have a little website like this. I go to the Microsoft website, check out the test drive. I could do copy and paste like the best of you out there. And then the last thing I'll show you is, did we do a box shadow? Yeah. I mean, you get the idea, right? Yeah. It's, actually Doris had it in her slide, but it's, hold on one sec, ie.microsoft.com/test drive. Yeah, click on this button, and that gets you there. Are we sharing these decks? Okay, yeah. Yeah, and actually, that's a good answer, because I actually put a lot of links in here. You haven't seen them yet, but you know, if you have any questions about some of the capabilities, I actually added a lot of links to it, and so hopefully it'll be a resource to you after the event. All right. No. This is just IE 10.
Oh.
Yeah.
So go to IE 10.
Yeah.
I can find this.
No. You go to this site. Yeah. ie.microsoft.com/test drive, and it gets you access to all of this.
No, my question is not test drive. My question is, where can I find this tool that I can use?
It's on the website.
Yeah.
I was just demonstrating a website to you. Yeah, you just copy and paste the CSS rules, and you're able to get this.
So not from the Visual Studio 10?
No. Just IE. Okay, so those are some of the kind of basic stuff. So let's kind of dive into the stuff that I've bolded, because I think you're going to be really excited about the other stuff too. So web fonts. Why web fonts? You know, IE actually supported web fonts since IE4. But Microsoft supported it in such a way that it respected intellectual property, so that fonts that you download and use within IE, you actually license them from someone. So you can't just kind of download them and start using it everywhere and not pay the foundries. But with CSS3, we added the capability for you to utilize all sorts of different font types and font formats. So why are fonts important? Because you know the typography that you use actually says something and is part of the message that you're trying to deliver on your website. And so the ability to have more than just Verdana, Times New Roman, Arial is important, right? Because you know, if you look at a lot of the cool websites, they use fonts that are a little bit different because they offer a different look so that it becomes a little bit more memorable, so that it's actually part of the experience of that website and that web app. And so it's very important to do that. The other thing is, you know, as I mentioned before, in the past, the way fonts were used is we kind of freeze-dried them in a static image, right? And so I guess you could add meta tags to your head section for you know search engine optimization, but now you could actually modify that content, and it could be indexed, and so a lot of benefits as it relates to web and web searches, and so Microsoft in cooperation with Mozilla and Opera submitted the spec for the Web Open Font format, which enables you to use TrueType, OpenType, and the Open Font format fonts. And so what it's done is it's actually enabled a ton of websites that utilize fonts with different looks, and it adds more variety and diversity to the web. And so it's actually spawned a whole industry of these font service bureaus, where they take care of the business of licensing fonts from a font foundry, and then in turn sell it to you based upon the number of times users come to your site to download those fonts to take a look at your web page and to use your web app. And so I've listed a number of them there, and you notice that I've put links on them. That way, when you get this app, you could just kind of click on them and kind of take a look at what's available. They each have a slightly different plan, and they also have vastly different fonts as well. And so I would encourage you to kind of take a look at some of these links here. But by no means is this an all-inclusive list of all the service bureaus that are around. Typekit actually was one that recently got acquired by Adobe because, you know, this is really an emerging area. There was a question back there. Yeah, they are supported on all the modern browsers. Yeah, so, you know, that's the good news. And so real easy, this is how you define a font from the web. So you have an @ rule for font face. You specify the name that you're going to call that font within your style sheet. So in this case, it's called my font. And you give it a URL. And that points to one of those service bureaus. And it will automatically understand the format, download the font, and that's how you use it within your app. Right, and so in this case, we've downloaded this font called My Font, and so I'm going to mark the p tag, and I would have a stack of fonts. So if My Font was successfully downloaded, it would use that. If not, it will use the serif font, wherever the designated serif font is on your system, and so that's how you're able to define your font stack. And so here's an example of a site that utilizes fonts. So I added the link there, so you don't have to write this down. So here, I think it's kind of cool. You click on Atlantis. So 20,000 leagues under the sea. So 0K leagues, and you scroll down. These are all fonts. A lot of times when you see text and typography on the web, you try to select it, you can't because it's an image. You could actually select it, right? If you could paste it, copy and paste it into Notepad. I think one of the cool things is if you use the F12 tools, let me do this, you can use the pointer to kind of point to that. And so that actually defines the text Atlantis. And so I'm going to just change that to Mountain View. That's just text. OK. That's just text. I think it's kind of cool because if you kind of keep scrolling and you go down to the 20,000 leagues, and that's where Atlantis is because there's a bubble down there where people live. Yeah, question. No, this is all just a website. Yeah.
Two sections, the top and the bottom.
Oh, no, that's just F12. You hit F12 with an IE, it brings that up. Okay. All right. And, you know, easily there's like here's another site that just essentially does the same thing. But again, you know, you look at the font treatment that they use, and it's totally gives you a different impression, a different experience, right? That's the power of type. Yes, it does. Actually, I have a link here. I think it's one of these slides that points to the W3C spec. I'll just quickly head to it. It actually defines you know, all sorts of different font types. And yeah, it's more than just English or the alphabet that we're used to. You could just click on that link or just do a search on your computer. All right, so that's that. All right, so the next thing I want to talk about is media queries. We talked about having your website being adaptive to different device formats. So media queries give you the ability to kind of examine the device properties. And so you can actually deliver and try to deliver an optimal experience given the constraints of your device. If it's a phone, it's narrower and has fewer pixels, well, you need to be able to deliver a different experience than if you had a large screen display, like a TV, for example. And so that's why you need to kind of adapt your output based on that media type. So you can actually query whether your web app is responding and displaying onto a screen, like the laptops that you have here, or whether it's actually for printing. So for example, if you develop a website that has a dark background, you probably don't want to print that because you're going to use a lot of toner, right? Plus, it probably isn't going to be very legible as well. So if you know that you're going to be outputting to paper, you might want to reverse the colors and print to a white background. And that's just, it improves the experience and just kind of the smart thing to do, right? We've also have tablets, and they're definitely a little bit more constrained than your 25-inch display at work or at home or whatnot. And so you want to be able to deliver a different experience there. And so let's take a look at what you can do with media query. So it's again another at rule that says, okay, we're looking at the media. We want to check to make sure that it's a screen, and it's at least got a maximum width of 600 pixels. And if that is the case, then we want to bump down the font size, right? Or if you look at the second rule there, if it's a screen and it's between 320 and 480 pixels, then there may be some things you want to do. Not only should you perhaps bump down the font, but maybe you kind of downsize the image, right? And maybe reflow some text so that it all fits nicely. But again, it's all in the context, same app, just different way of outputting that format based upon the constraints of your device. And so it's very, that is important. I won't go through the last rule. I mean, you could kind of look at it and make some sense of, okay, what do they mean by this? So some of the media properties that you could query is, the max and min height and width, and that way you could actually figure out, how you should structure your output. Orientation is important because if you have a mobile device, they could landscape or portrait, and so understanding whether you've got more pixels on in the vertical dimension versus the horizontal dimension will impact how you deliver that output to that device. Things like aspect ratio, resolution, I mean, those are things that, maybe today devices are pretty much share similar resolutions, but over time, you're going to have denser and denser pixels. And so you may want to deliver a different experience to a device that has very dense pixels, right? Because, 10 pixels on a regular display versus 10 pixels on a very dense display, your users can hardly see it. And understanding the device's capabilities is going to be important. And so here's a website. But before I go to there, I actually got a demo on this machine as well that I think was kind of cool. Just a hand. So if I pull it down and I reduce the hand, 4, 3, 2, 1, right? Now, this is kind of a gimmick, but it's not hard to understand that, wow, this could be powerful, right? Based upon the device that you are going to be sending your output to, you can actually have the content conform to the constraints of that device. So let's take a look at the other website. Oops, let me just what do I got here? All right, let me just close that and that. Okay, here's a link. So media queries, it's mediaquery.es, okay? Don't need to write it down, it's on the slide, the link's there. But essentially, what this site does, is it collects different websites that make use of media query. For those of you who've kind of been following along with you know, folks at Microsoft, you probably all know Scott Hanselman. He's one of our evangelists up in corporate. And so he actually developed a website that utilizes media query. So let's go to his website and take a look. And so what you'll notice, one is that he's a ham, because look at his picture, like that. But if you were to shift and change the size of his website, you'll notice a couple of things. You notice that when it gets down to a certain size, he gets rid of his, you know, his bio, right? Because there's not enough room. And really what he wants people to be able to see is his blog postings. And so if you shrink it down some more, you know, he's able to make use of media query to modify that site. And again, you know, the rules that I sent you, that I showed you a couple of slides ago, that's it. You know, all you have to do is determine the min and max, let's say, or maybe just one or the other, and then figure out, well, what kind of content should I send to the device when I've only got so many pixels to show. And so it's a real easy way of being able to do that. And you could kind of, oops. Okay. And you could just go through this website and kind of figure things out. The other thing I want to show you is, and we'll talk to this a little bit later on, is, you know, the other thing that the F12 developer tools gives you, which I kind of like, is this thing called a ruler. And so let me bring up the ruler. I'm going to use, let's use black. If you were to take your ruler and click on these, hold on 1 second. Whoops. Take your ruler. You can actually measure, and it snaps to the element. You see that this particular site, it says it's 34 pixels, but it actually has a column or a gutter of 34 pixels all the way across, right? And we'll talk about grid next, but this is an example of a grid that says that I want to be able to show four dimensions of this website, but I want to organize it in a very nice way, right? It's very neat. And if you look at magazines, if you look at textbooks, they utilize these techniques that's been developed in the print world for a long, long time. It's just that the web world had, you know, it needed us a long time to kind of catch up, right? When you read a book that you buy from a bookstore, it's not as long as a web page that you print out, because there's like, you know, if you were to print out a website, there'll be like 15 words to a line, and you know, you kind of lose your place, or you have to use your finger or use some device to make sure that you're maintaining, you know, the same line. But we've learned, and scientists have learned, that it's easier to read when the number of words are just enough so that your eyes can scan across the line without losing its place, right? And so by using grids, which has always been in use in the print world, you could actually develop a website that is easier to consume, right? And so we'll use this, but I just want once again show you F12. It's in the browser. And you're able to kind of use a ruler and kind of figure out, hey, you know, even if you're inspecting a website that you say, hey, that's pretty cool, you could use, you know, this tool to help you do that. So let me kind of speed up a little bit. Oops. a question may be, well, what do you do if my browser doesn't support media queries? And so there's this guy who actually developed a set of JavaScript libraries that will, all you have to do is just include, and I've got a link to that project. All you have to do is just include that script within your project, and it will automatically parse your CSS and does the detection, on those browsers that don't support media query yet, okay? So Grid, we saw a little example of Grid previously, but essentially it gives you a way of dividing the space into different regions. And then you could act upon them based upon the purpose of your app. And so this enables elements to kind of align or snap to these various definitions of columns and rows. And then you're able to span columns, span rows, overlap, as well as put two elements in the same position. And provided there's some transparency, you kind of get some fairly cool effects. And by using Grid, you can actually set up some CSS rules that says when my device is smaller, I need to reformat and reflow my grid and present the information in a different way. And so that's how all of these technologies kind of come together. And so real easily, here's kind of the grid that says here's a title of the game, here's the score, probably some stats here, here's the board, and here's some controls. And so what you see is that there is a vendor prefix, MS Grid, because it's not a standard yet. It's a spec that Microsoft has submitted to the W3C, and it's going through the standardization process. But basically what it says is that it's got two columns. This column that is auto, which means that it's going to take up as much space as the content in that column requires. And then the 1FR, that means it's fractional, which means that it will fill up the remaining space. And then it's got three rows. So the title, you don't want that to ever contract. So you make it auto, so it will always fit within this cell, right, 1-1. And also the last row, you don't want your score and your controls to ever contract either, because otherwise you can't play the game. So the thing that you can move around is the board. So your view into the board can change based upon the characteristics of your device, and that's how you define it, right? And then all you really have to do is just kind of say, hey, title goes here, score goes there, stats, board, control goes here, there, and the other place. And then you're able to essentially tell the board that it's going to span two rows, right, row span. So it starts here, and it spans into the second row, right? And it's as easy as that, okay? Now, it's less easy than some of the box shadow stuff, but not much more, right? If you kind of play around with it, you might have to invest a little time, but, I think we can all grok that.
In 1FR, what does 1 stand for?
Fractional unit. It means one. So so you could have multiple fractional units. And so basically what it'll do is it'll take that remaining space, calculate the number of fractional units, and then divide that by the number of elements to determine what space is available.
Question?
Yep, yeah. It's a similar idea. Yeah, and we'll get to Flexbox later, okay? So Grid, this is essentially the Grid system. And there's actually a lot of articles on the web with regards to Grid, but it's really with CSS3 and the Grid layout that really makes all of this easy, okay? And so you could see that, this is similar to to an output from maybe a magazine or something like that. And you could just basically snap each of these items. You see that cell right up there, right? It spans two columns. You see the grid system, which is the title. It's an H1. And so you put it into cell 1-1. And unfortunately or fortunately, the word system is wider than the width of that cell, but it's OK, right? You could still put something in position 1-2. And this is part of the IE test drive. And kind of in the interest of time, I'm just going to point you to the site, and you can kind of play around with it. So a gentleman up in the back there asked about a flexbox. So a flexbox essentially gives you the ability to place elements within a container called a box, right? And allows you to put those elements either horizontally or vertically relative to each other. And so for those of you who are familiar with WPF or XAML or Silverlight, this is, you know, very much like that. Right. Again, this is something that Microsoft submitted because, you know, we've had a lot of experience getting this right for this kind of element. And so you could have boxes within boxes. So, for example, if let's say your outer box is oriented horizontally, then within those containers, you could actually have elements that are oriented vertically. And so pretty soon you're able to compose a UI that is more complex than just, you know, one dimension and whatnot. So let's see some examples. So here's the definition of a div with a couple of buttons, and then you put it into a box, a flex box. Again, vendor prefix is there, and what it'll do is it knows that you're going to want to, in that confined space, stretch them out. And so you don't have to write any code. You just put it into a box and you declare that to be your display, to be a hyphen MS box, and you're done. And so what it'll do is, for example, if the user resizes your browser window where it might have fit 5 items at one time and you resize it, it will automatically do the reflow for you. So again, it's something that the browser does for you. It's hopefully will be part of the standard. Then it just makes your job a lot easier, right? And you can see how you could, you know, put within these containers, put another flex box, and kind of nest these various elements together. And so, hey Ed, I'm going to switch over here again. I got to log in again. So let's look quickly at the Flexbox layout. So essentially, it's got a couple of different ways of being represented. So you've got a menu. So you could kind of think of this as potentially a nav bar, right? With different clickable elements that you want to put in here. And then you might have a submenu. And that could be one way of using it. You could create a tic-tac-toe game. there are just many different ways of utilizing the Flexbox to create a user element for interaction. And again, it's, you know, if you use the site, it's able to essentially give you the div with the styles. And actually, I would use a class or an ID here and put these definitions, these rules, in an external style sheet. And that's Flexbox. Okay. Let's keep the displays the way they are, Ed. So next thing is the multi-column layout. And so a lot of times, question. Yeah, IE10 Platform Preview 3.
Okay.
All right.
I ran it in Firefox, and it doesn't do the same.
Yeah. Yeah, well, a couple of things. One is that this is a Microsoft browser extension that we're trying to standardize. That's why it had the dash MS vendor prefix. That may be why. I don't know how far along they are in terms of trying to implement this. Okay. All right. Oh, another question back. Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. So multi-column layout. Another. Yeah. I didn't catch that. The question is there another implementation of Flexbox by another browser vendor? Let's see. If there is, here's that link. So that points to the W3C spec, and there are actually a couple other browser vendors that are part of the definition of this. So multi-column layout is essentially, if you've got a lot of text, and again, you want to get away from the experience of 20 words on one line at a very small font size, it doesn't really render a very good reading experience. So how can you fix that? How can you fix that easily? So that's why Microsoft came out with this multi-column layout, which enables you to kind of reflow content between different columns. Right, so it's very similar to the grid, but each of the columns, you've got a gutter in between each of the columns, and it just kind of flows back and forth. So let me give you a quick example of that. Oh, before I do that, so here's an example. Here's what you don't want to do on the web, right? Look at how long this is. I mean, you've got pretty pictures, so you're kind of almost there, but it's much easier to read it when it's in this format. Right? And so that's what we want to get to. And so if you kind of look at what's required, all you really need to do is specify that div, that you give it a column count. And so it automatically does the reflow for you. And so let's see an example of that over here on this other machine, which you see on the side there. So here's, one column. Let's make it into three columns. And column count. And so all you need to do is kind of play around with the sliders. Here's the style sheet, style definition, right? And so you could fairly easily render almost a magazine-like experience with just some style sheet manipulation. Now, if you did that prior to CSS3, there'd be a lot of code, right? You'd be writing a lot of JavaScript and whatnot. So let's see what else I got here. Here's another example. Here's an example that kind of shows like a Twitter client. And so as you can see, it's got three columns. And we're just going to continually add tweets. And what you'll see is it actually flows, right, from column one to column two to column three, right? And then you could, if you were to add more columns, let me stop the tweets first otherwise. If you add more columns. And so not only does it do it in a cool way, but there's actually the intelligence that says, you don't want to split a tweet between two columns. That's hard to read. So it's actually got the smarts to know that, oh, this is one element. When I flow it, I'm going to flow the entire thing over, right? And again, you don't have to do the work, right? But if you could render that for your client, they're going to say, yeah, I want to hire you. Right? So back to this mouse. Oh, here's another example that I think is kind of cool. And I'm almost done. It's called the griddle. So again, it's just a website. I think this is part of the beauty of the web as well. No, actually, IE Test Drive. But essentially, what you can see here is that as your it essentially is a combination of all the things that we've talked about in terms of, you know, grid and flexbox and whatnot, that as you kind of resize your window, the content just adapts, right? And so you could go to the IE Test Drive site that Microsoft built and deconstruct this and offer something, you know, as adaptive as this. Okay, so real quickly, the tools, you've seen this before. Visual Studio 2010 SP1 gives you the ability to have HTML5 IntelliSense. And so you don't have to remember every tag, every value in the tag. And if you download and install the web standards update for SP1, that's what's going to get you checking for the latest stuff. We also have Expression Web. And it also gives you the ability to code and design, you know, through drag and drop HTML5. We showed F12 tools. I think there's going to be some F12 tool as part of the lab. You know, it comes with the browser. You don't have to do anything extra. I would encourage you to play around with it. And there are tons of you know, libraries and frameworks that just supports CSS3. And so that's. So all you have to do is download the Express version, install SP1 on it, and then install the web standards update. Yeah, it's part of the lab instructions that Doris has set up. And so there's also this other thing called CSS Lint. So if, let's say, you're new to CSS and, not sure if you're following best practices or whatnot, all you have to do is just copy and paste your stuff in there. And you can see from down here, you could have it check for all sorts of different things, right? And so it's a great free tool. That, again, there's a link there, basically cssLint.net, I think. Yeah, .net. And it could tell you, you know, hey, maybe you ought to shuffle some things around and because it will be cleaner. And so in summary, you know, CSS is not hard. I think if you utilize some of the sites and tools that we provide, it actually gives you a way to kind of slowly get your feet wet. We're not telling you to kind of, you know, take this thing hook, line, and sinker. Maybe you try a little border radius. You know, that's how you get yourself immersed. And then the rest will develop over time. And so, you know, it's daunting if someone were to throw at you 50 specs all at once. But if you do it a little bit at a time, you're going to start to master certain elements of it. And you're going to see that the learnings that you take from that will apply to the next thing that you're going to do. And so you could iterate your website, you know, a little bit at a time. So I'll think about adaptive design. You saw a couple of demos about how, you know, by resizing the viewport, you know, your device, your browser, it actually modifies that content. You know, changes the fonts, changes the images, changes the flow of the various elements of that page, and to all in an effort to yield a very satisfying experience. And so those are things that you can do, and it's not hard. And, you know, just kind of play around with it. Yeah. Any idea when those specs are going to, I guess, become a standard?
Yeah, so all of those things already proposed inside of WCC. It's just WCC hasn't tried to figure out what would be a final attribute to represent that particular feature. So that's why all the browsers will implement it, and then with the little prefix involved, you make one for that feature. And then,
sorry. So the question is, when is going to be final or something? So all the spec, all the features I think everything William showed here is already in W3C. You could take a look. The only thing is there is no sort of like a final attribute to represent that feature. So all the browser, if they want to implement that feature, they for now the solution is put a prefix before that. And then there will be a standard one. So if you see some of the code there, there is a standard, for example, ball radius. It's there. So you leave a standard one, and hopefully in the near future, that will be finaled. So you could actually remove all the prefix and yeah. just make it work.
Yeah. And the good thing about CSS is if you externalize it in a style sheet, it's only in one place. So if your entire website relies on it, you only fix it in one place and send it out. So finally, just a couple of resources. I do like books. And so I really like this series, A Book Apart. If you go to abookapart.com, they actually, these are the first six. They're coming out with two more. They're kind of small, condensed books on various topics. And so it's a quick read, but it's distilled in a way that I'm not having to go sift through a thousand pages to kind of get at the gist of it. And so it's a great resource. I really like the Visual Quick Start as well for CSS. And so you'll have these slides, and they look pretty as well. HTML5, this is kind of, a lot of people point to this as the book to learn about HTML5. This is actually the second edition, so make sure you buy that. And then lastly, I've got these other two that talk about, how do you develop and design websites using web standards. And so I would recommend them as well. Unfortunately, I don't get a commission. Maybe, I could set up a link, Amazon link. Okay, and that's it. I'll turn it, so we're gonna take a 10-minute break. Go and get some drinks and come on back at what time? 11:05. Thank you.